And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group here in Wilmington. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call at 910-251-6088. Well, of course, as we come on the air this morning, reaction continuing on a major, major announcement yesterday. Peace in the Middle East announced by President Donald Trump. We've been talking about this over the last couple of days as the two-year mark of the horrific October the 7th, 2023 attacks took place in portions of Israel at the hands of the Iranian-backed terror group Hamas. We just crossed that mark back a couple of days ago on Tuesday, October the 7th, just 2 days ago here. And we have learned and we knew that this week and we learned over the weekend that negotiations were continuing, that Gaza had at least accepted and Hamas had accepted some portions of a peace deal. Negotiations had been ongoing in Egypt since Monday. And the news broke last night, announced on Truth Social from President Donald Trump, that a peace deal has been made. The president wrote this on Truth Social, quote, "I am very proud to announce that Israel and Hamas have both signed off on the first phase of our peace plan. This means that all of the hostages will be released very soon, and Israel will withdraw their troops to an agreed-upon line as the first step towards a strong, durable, and everlasting peace. All parties will be treated fairly. This is a great day for the Arab and Muslim world, Israel, all surrounding nations, and the United States of America, and we thank the mediators from Qatar, Egypt, and Turkey who worked with us to make this historic and unprecedented event happen. Blessed are the peacemakers." That was the immediate and initial reaction from President Donald Trump earlier in the day, around 6 o'clock or so last night. The president was hosting a roundtable on left-wing terror at the hands of Antifa when his Secretary of State and Marco Rubio busted into the meeting, went over to the president, whispered in his ear, handed him a note, and the president said that we are getting very close to an agreement being made. That was around 5-6 o'clock, and then as we headed into the 7 o'clock hour, this post from the president on Truth Social announcing that the first phase of that peace plan has been agreed upon by both parties. That includes the Iranian-backed terror group Hamas operating in Gaza, as well as Israel. And, you know, one of the things that has grown in terms of a topic of discussion over the last couple of months is, are both sides truly interested in peace? Right? It's one thing, and this is an ongoing debate as you look at the war that continues to brew between Ukraine and Russia. Right? You hear publicly that both sides are interested in peace. Zelensky says it, Putin says it, yet when the rubber meets the road, both of them at different times have made complete fools of themselves and have led people to believe that maybe they're not actually interested in peace. And I was starting to grow concerned that we were going to start seeing something similar in the conflict between Hamas and Israel. And fortunately, at least with all of the details we have this morning, that does not appear to be the case, at least as of right now. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu released a statement, said, "With God's help, we will bring them all home," noting, "A great day for Israel tomorrow." That would be today. "I will convene the government to approve the agreement and bring all of our dear hostages home. I thank the historic soldiers of the IDF and all security forces. Thanks to their courage and sacrifice, we have reached this day. I thank from the bottom of my heart President Trump and his team for mobilizing this sacred mission of freeing our hostages. With God's help, together we will continue to achieve all of our objectives and expand peace with our neighbors." Hamas also released a statement saying, quote, "After responsible and serious negotiations conducted by the movement and the Palestinian resistance factions regarding President Trump's proposal with the aim of ending the war of extremism against our Palestinian people and the withdrawal of occupation of the Gaza Strip, Hamas announces the reaching of an agreement that ends the war on Gaza, provides for the withdrawal of occupation, and allows the entry of aid and implements of a prisoner exchange. So even the Hamas-based terror group announcing that they have agreed to this publicly and that things are moving forward. The president broke his silence, even though he did post on social media, broke his media silence last night. He was on exclusively just at the top of the hour with Sean Hannity on his ever-popular Fox News show. This was the president breaking it down last night.
Very much, Sean. It's a great honor to be involved in it. We had some tremendous help, as you know, with everybody from Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and Marco, and we had everybody. JD, the whole group was just amazing, and the military was, as you know, very instrumental in getting this done. We have a great military with great leadership. The whole world came together, to be honest. So many countries that you wouldn't have even thought of, and they came together. The world has come together around this deal, and that's something I would say that without that, wouldn't happen. So many countries that you wouldn't have thought of have wired their best wishes and their commitment to do whatever is necessary. The countries surrounding have all signed. I mean, they're all signed up, and it's been really an amazing period of time, and so great for Israel, so great for Muslims, for the Arab countries, and so great for this country, for the United States of America, and that we could be involved in, you know, making a deal like this happen, because it was, you know, many years they talked about peace in the Middle East. This is more than Gaza. This is peace in the Middle East, and it's an incredible thing.
So that's the president on the Sean Hannity show on Fox News last night, on the phone with Hannity, making the announcement, providing additional details and information. It was a lengthy interview. No surprise that he did with Hannity. And before we get into some of the additional details on this, there's a 72-hour clock that is ticking right now for the release of those hostages. The president is expected to travel as soon as Monday to portions of the Middle East. You can imagine that in the overnight hours, security teams working frantically to make sure that all of that is prepared and ready to go. You know, the president, typically when he makes an international trip, hell, even a domestic trip, you know, there are days, weeks worth of planning that goes into it. So the fact that this is all happening in the span of just a couple of days, security forces and intel folks and advanced people all making their plans this morning to ensure that the president is able to travel over to the Middle East safely, that coming up again, potentially as early as Monday, still waiting for additional details on that. But this is why somebody like President Donald Trump is so popular amongst the American people. When you elect, and I'm speaking for myself, but I think a lot of folks would agree with this. When you elect a president of the United States, you are looking to elect somebody that is going to be a strong leader. Now, that doesn't mean that you are going to agree, and it doesn't mean that you should agree with everything that said leader does. But there is no question about it that there is a massive difference when you've got a strong leader versus a weak leader. And I'm not going to sit here this morning and rehash the entire Biden administration. For longtime followers of me, you're well aware of my thoughts on the Biden administration. I spent 3 years on the radio here in Wilmington talking about it. So I'm not going to rehash and relitigate the entire Biden administration, but it is obvious now that you've been able to see both administrations side by side, it is blatantly obvious and clear what the difference between weak leadership and strong leadership is. There is a zero, and I mean 0% chance that this agreement would have been made under a Harris administration. This conflict, as you're well aware, broke out during the Biden administration. There is a 0% chance that this deal would have been brokered under the Biden administration, and it didn't. I mean, complete stalemate. Nothing, no substantial progress, nothing at all. And I have no doubts in my mind that had Kamala Harris been successful in November of last year, we would not be talking about a peace agreement this morning. We just wouldn't. Because those two individuals, both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are not strong leaders. And when you're talking about negotiating peace between a sovereign nation in Israel and an Iranian-backed group of terrorists that back just 2 years ago flew paramotors and brutally slaughtered more than 1,000 people in portions of Israel, you need somebody that is strong. And frankly, you need somebody that's not going to put up with any bullshit leading that negotiation. That's what it is, plain and simple. You need somebody that is willing to stand strong, is not going to cower to individuals like the Hamas terror group operating in Gaza, and is going to be abundantly clear with what the consequences are if a deal isn't made. You've heard me say this before, but I'll reiterate. The president can do as much as in his power to try and bring the two parties together. But just like between Russia and Ukraine, the president cannot force groups to agree to peace. He can facilitate the discussions. He can lean on various groups. He can tighten the bolt. He can put pressure. He can do all of that stuff. But he can't literally force them to agree to an agreement like this. He can't do that. So through negotiations, through pressure, you are now seeing the success of strong leadership in the United States. And the first phase of a peace agreement, which will include the release of all of the remaining hostages in Gaza, it's unclear exactly what that number looks like. There were, at the start, back 2 years ago, more than 250 people taken hostage by Hamas. It's not clear how many are still alive. Plenty have been released since, but numbers are between 20 and 40 still alive, dozens dead due to the inhumane treatment of the Iranian-backed terror group known as Hamas. But this is what strength looks like, ladies and gentlemen. This is what having a strong leader looks like. And I know that there's a lot of animosity on the political left against Donald Trump. I know that they, for whatever reason, believe and feel that he is a terrible person, he's a terrible president, and he's bad for our country, bad for the world. But it's hard to look at what unfolded last night. It's hard to look at the reaction coming in this morning and not say that this is only happening because of the strong leadership of President Trump. And I put this in my morning line email this morning. I wrote, "So let me get this straight. The man that the Democrats have spent 10 years comparing to Adolf Hitler is now on the brink of brokering one of the most successful Middle East peace deals in history, and he's the most popular American president Israel has ever had. That's pretty remarkable." And when you look at what has been said about the president over the last decade, it's pretty true, pretty accurate. And it just goes to show you the nonsensical hysteria that exists on the left. The nonsensical hysteria that they have created around President Trump. This could very likely go down. And there's obviously, this is the first phase. There will be more. Both sides, which again, the president has no control over, both sides have to agree. Both sides have to hold up their end of the deal. The president cannot force them to do that. But there is a strong likelihood that if this deal holds together, which everybody hopes, at least you should, everybody should hope that that's the case. If this deal holds together, there is a strong likelihood that this could very well be the most important thing that President Trump does in his entire administration, at least from a international political standpoint. There's a lot more that the president hopes and looks to accomplish. There's a lot more of the MAGA agenda that is still yet to be fulfilled. I'm not slamming the president on that. I'm just stating he's only been in office now a little over 9 months. Lots happened. But in terms of, you talk about the legacy of an administration, right? You look at presidents throughout history, whether it was the Berlin Wall crumbling, being taken down, or you look at prisoners being released, the prisoners being held by Iran. You look at these major international diplomacy events that happen. It is often the case that those become some of the defining legacies of an administration. The president has now got this deal, at least phase one of it, done. as I read the statement and comment from the Israeli Prime Minister and Benjamin Netanyahu, their government is going to meet together today to ratify that, to get that squared away. Hamas doesn't really have a real government, so I don't know. I don't think there's any voting that goes on. They're not a democracy by any stretch of the imagination. So they have agreed to it, and we begin phase one. Hostage releases within the next 72 hours, a major win for President Donald Trump. More from his interview with Sean Hannity last night.
I think you're going to see people getting along, and you'll see Gaza being rebuilt. We're forming a council that... The Council of Peace, we think it's going to be called, and it's going to be very powerful. And it's going to really, I think to a large extent, it's going to have a lot to do with the whole Gaza situation. People are going to be taken care of. It's going to be a different world. I think really the Middle East came together. Amazingly, they came together. You know, they have some countries with extraordinary wealth, and just spending a small portion of that wealth can do so much for that area. So we'll be involved in it, but the big thing is hostages are going to be released. It's probably our time would be probably Monday, and you know it's a terrible situation. They're deep in the earth, and they're being gotten, and a lot of things are happening right now as we speak. So much is happening to get the hostages freed, and we think they'll all be coming back on Monday.
So that's President Donald Trump talking about that release taking place on Monday. Again, he is, the reporting is kind of all over the place. I'm reading certain things that he is set to travel over there. Then other people are saying, yeah, it's just a rumor. He's not. But it does appear, at least from some of the reporting that we have seen in over the last, you know, 5 or 6 hours, that it seems highly likely that the president will travel to the Middle East. As you can imagine, this was a major topic of discussion on cable news last night, continues to be a major topic this morning. This was CNN's show last night, the show that Abby Phillips hosts. That's the one that Scott Jennings, of course, is on. And the question was asked, why wasn't this doable under President Biden? It's a fair question. I mean, this conflict started under his watch. I'm not saying it was Joe Biden's fault. Let me make sure I'm abundantly clear. I don't put this at the feet of Joe Biden. But he was the president when it started, and he failed to broker and negotiate peace. So that was a question on CNN. Let's take a listen to what the response was there.
I think that this was not doable when President Biden was in office.
I think the biggest problem that the President Biden had is there was no pressure from Qatar, from Turkey, from Egypt. They were actually facilitating in many ways what was going on. And that is really ultimately how it all came together.
So, I mean, but I think by saying that, it's sort of an acknowledgement. Trump has changed that dynamic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think
absolutely.
That...
I mean, he's clearly...
I don't know how he, you know, and... I think there's a lot that remains to learn about what prompted that change, but I do agree. Yes, somehow, some way that changed.
There's a Democrat Dan Goldman having to admit on national television last night that the dynamic has changed. And as I just mentioned, and we were just talking about, why has that dynamic changed? The office of the president is exactly the same in terms of its power when Joe Biden was in office. So the office itself hasn't changed. What has changed is the individual that's in charge. What has changed is that you've got a no-nonsense guy in President Donald Trump who, again, not like there's plenty going on here in the United States. It's not like there's nothing going on domestically and he's got all of this free time and he's just sitting there twiddling his thumbs, worrying about what he can work on internationally. There's plenty of issues domestically. And while the president is handling and trying to tackle all of that, at the same time, he's brokering peace between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. He's continuing to try to broker peace between Russia and Ukraine, a major summit taking place, you're well aware, a couple months ago in Alaska, between the Russian president and Putin and U.S. President Donald Trump. there's a lot of plates spinning all at the same time in this administration. There's a lot of multitasking going on. And so when you see, and Democrats are now having to admit that the dynamic has changed. Democrats are now having to publicly state, yeah, this is very different. This is not the same situation that we were in the past. They are having to admit the failures of the previous policy. They are having to admit that this is a huge contrast and a huge difference in what we just saw. And this, folks, this is not about running a victory lap. Let me be clear. This is not in any way, shape, or form about running a victory lap. But what this is about is highlighting the very clear difference between two administrations. And mainstream media, at least with what I've had the opportunity to watch since this morning, media is going to have an impossible time trying to spin this. There is no spin. I mean, I've had cable news on here since before 5 o'clock this morning. And of course, every network is talking about it. And I have not seen any negative headlines about the situation, which is remarkable. Because you're looking at a media apparatus, a media entity in mainstream media that will find the negative in any story as long as it paints the individual that they believe to be their political opposition in Donald Trump. They will paint any story negative. It doesn't matter what it is, who it includes, what the details are. Everything will always be negative. It has to be. They cannot. It would literally kill them to have to admit that this president has done something successfully. They refuse to do it. They have so much animosity, so much hatred for Donald Trump that it is impossible for them to do so. And so this one, again, as it stands right now, this is going to be a really hard one to try and spin into a negative situation. This is going to be a really hard one to spin into a bad deal, a bad job by the President of the United States. So looking at some additional details on this, according to Israeli officials, the living hostages, as we have been talking about, and as the president noted on Hannity's show last night on Fox, the living hostages are expected to be released in a single phase. So this is not like what we've seen in the past where, you know, one prisoner or a handful of prisoners every 24 or 48 hours. This is a mass release of all of the hostages within a 72 hour period. It will happen at once. And the return of the bodies of those that are deceased obviously will take a little bit longer. However, Israel has insisted that is absolutely part of this first phase. And from all reporting and all accounts, Hamas has agreed to that as well. Hamas, reportedly backed by some Israeli sources, claims that part of the delay in the deceased individuals is from the fact that some of the bodies are not located in areas currently under its control. Following Trump's announcement, a group called the Hostages Families, which is a conglomerate which is representing all of the various individuals that are still being held hostage, released the following statement saying, quote, "The hostages' families wish to express deep gratitude to U.S. President Donald Trump and his team for the leadership and determination that led to this historic breakthrough, an end to a war and a comprehensive agreement to return all hostages. There are 48 hostages in Hamas captivity. Our moral and national commitment is to bring them all home, both alive and fallen alike. Their return is a condition for the rehabilitation and revival of Israeli society as a whole. We will not rest or be quiet until the return of the last hostage. We will bring them back. We will rise." So the 20-point peace plan has been agreed upon. As it stands right now, we are still awaiting additional information, still waiting for additional details out of the administration. As you can imagine, this is an incredibly dynamic situation. But again, it is going to be hard for anybody to point at this situation. It is going to be hard for anybody to look at what has gone on over the last, you know, couple of days since Monday, when these negotiations really kicked off and everybody was in the same room over in Egypt. It's going to be really hard to look at this and try and paint this in a negative light. And it should be. And this comes to a greater issue. All right, we spent yesterday's show talking about the disaster that is current mainstream media. We should not be at a time, and I shouldn't say I'm proud to say, but for folks that have followed me, I am willing to give the other side credit when they do something that I agree with. I'm willing to do it. I've done it my entire time operating in media, whether it was, you know, behind the scenes hosting the morning shows on 980 here in Wilmington or now here on the Nick Craig Show podcast. I'm an equal opportunity offender. If Democrats do something that I think is good, that I agree with, I'm willing to give them credit. We should be willing to give the other side credit. And I think many folks on the right, more than on the left, are willing to give their opposition credit when they do something that makes sense. When they stand up for something, or they make comments, or they push for something that we can agree upon. But it's very, you don't see that very frequently on the left, especially as you get further and further down the political spectrum on the left. They are unwilling to give Donald Trump credit for anything. And it's why you hear the joke all the time, Trump could cure cancer tomorrow and Democrats would find a reason to say that it's not good. Oh, well, now the people that work in the big pharma aren't going to have jobs. So now Trump has ripped these people's livelihoods away. That bastard. Ugh, I hate him. I mean, that would be the reaction. They have to find something. And that's really, really unfortunate that we're at that point. It is incredibly unfortunate that as a nation, regardless of political opinion, you cannot look at a situation objectively and say that this is unequivocally a good thing. And vice versa, you should be able to look at a situation and say this is unequivocally a bad thing. Because so many of us are so insulated in our, not our political ideology, but the news that we're getting, the information that we're getting. It has really polarized the public to a point where they refuse to believe or give credit to anybody that they don't like. And that's a problem. It's a huge issue. And it will continue, I think, plague the United States going forward and be a major problem. Getting some reaction coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Jared Kushner, President Trump's Jewish son-in-law, was instrumental in the Abraham Accords during the first Trump administration and now the Israel-Hamas Middle East peace deal. You're absolutely correct. Kushner and trying to remember who the other main U.S. person was. Was it it may have been Steve Witkoff. Kushner and who the rest of the U.S. delegation, they have been in Egypt since Monday negotiating and hammering out the details on this plan. It's no surprise. It's not a secret. It's been publicized. And of course, you look back at the Abraham Accords during the first Trump administration. That was another huge international global win for the administration. But something that, again, people refuse to give the administration credit for. Some other comments coming in saying our negotiators need some airtime too. They are at the table. Absolutely. I mean, you heard the president talk about the individuals that negotiated this deal, the individuals that have been working hard on this. And obviously, the conversation accelerated on Monday when everybody was in the same room. But as you can imagine, this back and forth, these negotiations have been going on since day one. I mean, from the second that the president was sworn in as the 47th president of the United States, you can guarantee that he deployed individuals within his administration and his team to open the lines of communication, to start the discussions, just like he did with Russia and Ukraine and some of the other international issues that he's been able to solve in just this relatively short amount of time. Folks, it's only been 9 months. I mean, you look at what has happened, some of the successes out of this administration. It's been 9 months. We've got 3 more years of this. Hopefully. Hopefully 3 more years of success and prosperity, not only in the United States, but across the rest of the globe. So this is a major political win for the president. This is a major humanitarian win of for the world, not even just the administration. And again, we'll watch and see how this kind of plays out and unfolds over the next couple of days. The president potentially traveling to the Middle East as soon as Monday. We'll keep an eye on all the details and bring them to you as soon as we get them right here on the Nick Craig Show. We are, of course, now in the middle and continue to be in the middle of a government shutdown. Day 9 here for us this morning. We'll get into some details on that. Plus, we'll talk to economist Dr. Vance Ginn about the shutdown and where everything plays out. But before that, this show is only possible thanks to the great folks over at the law group here in Wilmington, Melissa Gott and her team. And I do want to let you know that when legal challenges arise, some legal challenges are good, right? Purchasing a house, that's a legal situation that you have to go through. That's a good one or a bad one. The law group has your back, and their experienced attorneys have providing high quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state now since 2003. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and any issues you have are resolved as promptly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located in downtown Wilmington, and they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. When you visit their website, lawgroupnc.com, you can meet all of their attorneys, read about them, their backstories, their history, the areas of practice, things that the Law Group specializes in on. And one of the features of their website, which is really great, is their blog, where they will discuss and go through a variety of legal issues and challenges that you could be dealing with. All of that available over on their great website, lawgroupnc.com. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. All right, day 9 of the government shutdown. We'll have details coming up after this as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Thursday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us, whether you're joining us live on our live platforms, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, or 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. As we sit here this morning, Thursday, October the 9th, we are now within day nine of the Schumer federal government shutdown ahead of a very interesting week ahead as the federal government, federal employees' paychecks are set to go out 6 days from now on Wednesday, October the 15th, that coming up next week. The debate continues in Washington, D.C., and from all accounts, all accords, the sides are both still very dug in. There appears to be very little, if any, progress that has been discussed or debated over the last couple of days. We have seen continuing dueling press conferences from House Speaker Mike Johnson and the House Minority Leader and Hakeem Jeffries over the last couple of mornings. They host their press conferences. They last, 30, 45 minutes, take a couple of questions, say the other side is wrong, and that's been about it. It's not immediately clear if any additional conversations are taking place. However, there was an interesting debate yesterday in the hallways of the United States Capitol between Hakeem Jeffries and Mike Lawler. Take a listen to this. A little hard to hear because there's a lot of folks around, but take a listen to just a little bit of this ongoing in Capitol Hill yesterday.
Did you get permission from your boss?
Why don't we sign on
did,
right
did
now?
Your boss, Donald
you can
Trump?
Easily extend
did your
the ACA right now.
Did your boss,
right
Donald Trump,
he's
give
not
you
my
permission?
Boss.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not. By the way,
so let me ask you a
why
question.
Did you vote to
let
shut the government down?
You
why
know
did
I
you vote to shut
let
down?
Let me ask you a question.
For years, you always lectured about
making,
how we need to keep the government open.
You're making a show of this to
no,
make yourself
sad.
Relevant.
It's sad. You could easily sign on to this.
You're embarrassing yourself right now.
You could sign on to this. The only embarrassment here is you.
You're an embarrassment.
You could sign on to the bill.
Let me ask you a question.
You have four Democrats on here. Why won't you sign on to
it? Let me ask you a question.
It's a clean extension for 1 year.
You voted for the one thing ugly bill, correct?
I voted for a tax cut bill that gave the largest tax cut Americans in history, including, by the way, the average New Yorker getting a $4,000 tax cut. Are you against that?
You're embarrassing
yourself
right now. Do you
want to cut the standard deduction in
half?
The
largest cut
to
Medicaid in American history, you voted for that.
Fraud and abuse, by the way.
You voted
Tom DiNapoli, the Democratic controller of New York,
let me ask you a question.
Pointed out that $1.2 billion were wasted.
Listen, you're not going to talk to me
fraud
and talk over me.
Hakeem Jeffries is such a jackass. It's just the smug nature, pointing his finger down at my, you're not going to talk to me like that. You're not going to talk to me like that. This is the best that the Democrats have got. I mean, this is the absolute A-team on full display for the Democrats. Hakeem Jeffries just repeating over and over again, you're embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing yourself. You're embarrassing yourself. I mean, that's all that they've got. Because there's no other explanation for what's going on.
Because you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, I'm listening.
So why don't
you
just keep your mouth shut?
Oh,
because you
is that the way to talk?
You showed up, and so you voted for this one big ugly bill.
I signed on for this. You can extend it right now.
A permanent extension of massive tax breaks for your billionaire donors.
So 90% of Americans.
So they can get a permanent extension.
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
90% of Americans take the standard deduction.
Is that right?
If you had your way, the standard deduction would have been cut in half. That would have been a massive tax increase on Americans all across the country.
You're
support
here,
that?
Unfortunately.
You're against lifting the cap on salt.
Your billionaire donors.
The billionaire donors. Lifting the cap on salt, we put a income cap in place.
Why are you here right now?
An income didn't you want all Republicans to be here?
Where are the rest of your Republicans?
You wanted Republicans to be here. I'm here.
Why are you
here? And by the way, you can pass an ACA extension right now. Sign on to this bill.
Did your boss
sign on to the bill?
Is your boss Donald Trump behind
that? HR 5145. Why don't you get on it?
Mike, is your boss Donald Trump behind that?
Why won't you get on it?
Because you don't work for the American people.
Oh, I do. I work for the people of New York. I work for the people of my district.
Is that why you...
I'm here.
You got 145,000
people. By the way, I voted for a clean CR to keep the government open and funded. You voted to shut it down.
You're embarrassing yourself right now.
Yeah, leader, with all due respect, you're the one...
Why are you playing yourself?
You're the one who actually voted to shut the government down.
Actually, you know that's not...
I mean, it's insane. This government shutdown has been going on 9 days, and the best thing that Hakeem Jeffries can come up with is the same garbage that you've heard for 40 years that, tax breaks only help billionaires. As Mike Lawler clearly lays out, and rightfully so, the Trump tax cuts that were re-certified in the One Big Beautiful Bill, which passed back in July, raises the standard deduction, which, as he notes, 90 plus, and it's higher than just 90. 90%+ of the American people, myself included, and probably every single one of you, take the standard deduction. You don't itemize your returns. You take the standard deduction. Unless you've got an insane amount of expenses, you are taking, like most of every single other middle-class American, you are taking the standard deduction. And Hakeem Jeffries can come up with nothing but you're embarrassing yourself, and this is a tax break for billionaires and millionaires. The same old sorry song and dance from the Democrats, who, as you will be well aware, have been in positions of power owning not only the executive branch, but both branches of Congress for a variety of times over the last 20 or 30 years. If they cared so much about holding the billionaires and millionaires accountable, they at any point could have changed the tax code. At any point. Chuck Schumer has been in Congress for 40 freaking years. If the tax code is so broken that at any point, Democrat Chuck Schumer out of New York could have changed it. There has been plenty of times where Schumer has been the majority leader, where Democrats have controlled both branches of Congress and the White House. In case in point, right after the 2020 presidential election, they had a complete and total control of the government. They didn't change the tax code. They didn't change the tax code to stop giving breaks to billionaires and millionaires like Hakeem Jeffries notes. So if they've never acted on it, I think it is only fair for me to assume that it is obviously not that big of a deal. I mean, if you've allowed this, like somebody like Schumer, if you've allowed this to go on for 40 years in Congress, I can only begin to assume, and I think rightfully so, that you obviously don't care about the issue, right? Because you would have done something. If I care about an issue, I'm going to do something about it. I'm not just going to say I care about it and then just sit on my hands and do nothing, which is what Schumer and the Democrats have done now for 30 or 40 years.
It's him. You voted to shut the government down.
Do Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the President?
Right, and you're smart enough to know that you need 60 votes in the Senate, right?
Is that right? No.
Do you need 60 votes in the Senate or no?
Were 60 votes needed to pass your one big ugly bill?
Reconciliation, which you did with the IRA, boy, that really reduced inflation.
Are you trying to elevate yourself because you're afraid
you're about to lose re-election? I'm not trying to elevate myself. No, I'm not going to lose re-election. You spent $42 million last cycle. You didn't do that great.
Why aren't you running for governor right now?
Because I actually enjoy this job, and I'm here to do it. And by the way, you could actually pass a subsidy right now to ensure that people don't have health care premiums going up. Why won't you support this one-year bill?
Let me ask you a question.
Tom Suozzi's on it. Jared Golden.
Let me ask you a question.
Marie Bluesenkamp Perez. Are they wrong?
Don Davis, North Carolina.
Yeah.
On the floor. Did he send you?
No, I'm here on my behalf of my constituents because you shut the government down. And my constituents are suffering as a result of your ridiculous ploy because you're so afraid of Zohran Mandami. By the way, when are you endorsing him?
By the way,
do you endorse him for mayor?
First of all, are you,
going to endorse him for mayor?
Listen, you're a complete and total embarrassment right now.
Oh, why is that? Because you don't want to answer the question?
Is this supposed to be a video for your failed election?
You don't want to answer the question? Do you support Zohran? By the way, did you see his statement yesterday?
Listen.
An embarrassment on October 7th blaming the Jews? You support that? Should he be the Democratic nominee for mayor?
First of all, I don't answer to you.
Should he be the Democratic nominee for mayor?
I'll answer whatever questions I need to answer about the mayor's
race. Okay, so you think his statement yesterday was okay?
First of all,
that's sad.
First of all,
it's unfortunate.
Don't come with this phony.
These are bills.
No, these are
bills. They're not phony. They're real bills.
You talk about getting absolutely excoriated. I mean, what a bad look for Hakeem Jeffries. That's a 4-minute and 15-second video. There's a lengthier version out there that is just the same crap back and forth. 4-minute and 15-second video. And the Senate, the House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, says absolutely nothing that is relevant. Goes back to the same old Republicans cut taxes for their billionaire friends. Well, as a middle-class American and as a conservative Republican, I appreciate the standard deduction being raised so I pay less in federal income tax. I appreciate that as a not a billionaire, not a millionaire, and just repeats, you're an embarrassment, shut your mouth. 9 days into the shutdown, Democrats have not been able to message anything about it. This would have been a great opportunity for me, from a purely political standpoint. This would have been a great opportunity for Hakeem Jeffries to point and really kind of set the Democrat messaging and set the Democrat tone as this shutdown continues. He had the opportunity yesterday with Mike Lawler and provided nothing. Nothing. Oh, your boss, you're a lackey for Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump is the Republican president of the United States, and Mike Lawler is a Republican in Congress. I wouldn't call him a lackey, but as you can imagine, when you have two individuals that are with the same political party, when you have two individuals that have the same ideals, the same platforms, they're probably going to agree on a lot. So I don't know that it would be accurate to call Mike Lawler a lackey for Trump. They have the same policies, the same backgrounds. They're looking to push the same agenda forward. So if that makes everybody a lackey that agrees with somebody else, then I guess you'll have to sign him up. But that's all he's got. Your lackey boss sent you down here. What a poor performance from Hakeem Jeffries. No surprise. No surprise at all. Democrats have no strong leaders and no strong messaging. And it's going to lead them, I think, into a very... I think it's not only going to, I think it already is leading them into a very bad spot politically. No messaging, no ideas, no retorts, nothing. There's nothing they can say about this CR because it is, and I don't know whose idea this was. I don't know if it came from Trump, maybe Steve Miller, some of the other folks in the administration. An absolutely brilliant idea for this to be just a regular, clean CR. Because you give the Democrats no room at all to argue that this is some crazy partisan bill and the MAGA Republicans are trying to do this. There's no policy, zero policy in this legislation. Now looking at this 9 days in, that was an absolutely genius idea by this administration and by people like House Speaker Mike Johnson and John Thune, whoever else was in the discussion and in the equation. An absolutely genius move to give the Democrats no room at all to claim that this is just rife with crazy right-wing policy. So day nine of the government shutdown continues. This clip from yesterday shows that there's obviously no significant movement happening. We are, of course, keeping an eye on all the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. As we've been talking about this morning, day nine of the federal government shutdown does continue to get a little bit more insight on what is actually going on inside the federal government right now. It's my pleasure to welcome economist Dr. Vance Ginn back to our airwaves here on the Nick Craig Show. Vance, thanks for the time as always. Always appreciate your insight. We talked about this last time, but you spent some time in OMB. That's the Office of Management and Budget. So when there's a government shutdown, what exactly is going on in the agency you spent time in during the first Trump administration?
Yeah, Nick, it's always a pleasure to be with you. And I was chief economist for the Office of Management and Budget. So had a high, you know, had a seat there to really see the inner workings of the federal government and right there in the White House complex and everything else. And when you hear about this federal government shutdown right now, over you know, spending on healthcare for illegal aliens and people who shouldn't even be eligible for this Medicaid payments as well, what we see is that a lot of the federal government doesn't actually shut down. Really, what this is a matter of national parks. There's some TSA security. There's some, there's other types of things that do either shut down or have a partial shutdown overall. But the big ticket items like Social Security checks, those keep going out. National defense, those keep going on. ICE, custom enforcement of the border and things of that nature, those items continue to be funded. It's really more of the things that, like the Smithsonian, they're not open. They're opening up on October 11th. Closing on October 11th. But how many people actually go to those things? Not a lot. So I think for everyday Americans, they won't notice this really at all. What I really hope can happen, though, is out of all this, is to come through with a better spending federal budget, because right now we're spending way too much. And that is really the crisis on our hands, not the shutdown.
Yeah, and as we look at the proposal that's on the table that failed last week in the Senate, failed to meet that 60-vote filibuster threshold, it is just a clean continuing resolution, as you noted, keeping the government funded until I think it's November 21st with current spending from before. So we'll presumably watch that debate begin to take place once the government reopens. Here we are, Vance, less than a week away from October the 15th. That is kind of the date on many people's calendar as action from somebody, because that will be the second pay period for the month of October in which federal employees, the folks you just mentioned, the TSA employees, air traffic controllers, other folks within the federal government will not be receiving a paycheck unless the government opens. I would have to imagine that's probably going to have to push the Democrats to come on board and get 60 votes for this filibuster.
I would think so. When you start seeing more delays on airplanes and more of those Democrats who can't get home to go and, try to win votes and talk to people and talk to their constituents and everything else, that'll start having them scratching their head a little bit and saying, how do we get this thing done? At the end of the day, whenever I look at this, Nick, I mean, they're looking at the Democrats want $1.5 trillion more dollars in government spending. After the one big, beautiful bill that was passed earlier this year, what it said was that we're not going to provide Medicaid for illegal aliens. That seems like a no-brainer. Some states, like in California, they've made it to where illegal aliens can receive those funds and for Medicaid, and that's against the federal law now, and so that should go away. The same thing applies to during the COVID era emergency situation. A lot of people were, whether you had your income went up or your age was above the eligibility criteria, you could still stay on Medicaid. And it's basically saying, look, we're going back to before we were the COVID lockdowns and emergency. All the emergency is over. Why do we need to do that? But yet the Democrats, what do they want, Nick? They want socialized health care. They want national health care. And so they feel like any way you're taking away from some of these people, you're actually creating a bigger problem, when in fact their solutions of expanding Medicaid, of $1.5 trillion more dollars in national debt, that is really creating the crisis.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up, turning this into a political stuff. We'll get back to the economic stuff here in a second. As you just noted with some of these discussions about $1.5 trillion in healthcare for illegal migrants, Vance, this is an 80-20 political issue. For anybody that's a longtime political observer, they know about the 80-20 rule. This absolutely falls into the 80-20. 20% of the public is in favor of this, predominantly those on the farther side of the political left aisle. 80% of the rest of the American public thinks it's absolutely absurd that we would be giving free or heavily subsidized health care to individuals who are legally in the United States. Yet Democrats, at least up until today, still continue to have their heels dug in pretty deep on this. I heard from Hakeem Jeffries over the last couple of days. He doesn't seem to be moving off the issue at all.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, the type of situation that the Democrats are in. I mean, if this is really all they have to show the American people of how they can lead and govern, then they've got a lot more problems that they need to figure out, because this is not what Americans want. And at the end of the day, there was an election just last year where there was a huge change where President Trump got a majority of the vote, the first time for a Republican in decades. And now the Democrats still want to double down on these bad policies. I think this is going to hurt the Democrats more than it has in any of the other shutdowns, because usually the Democrats are good at, you know, pointing the fingers at Republicans. And Republicans have just kind of said, all right, well, they end up taking it, whether they like it or not, that it was their fault. But this time, I think the Americans are seeing that this is the problem of the Democrats. And I should say that, look, Republicans have gotten us into this fiscal crisis as well. It's been a bipartisan problem between Democrats and Republicans, so I don't want to take that off of them. But the issue on the table today is that the Democrats want to give Medicaid, a program that was meant for pregnant mothers, for the poor, and for children. That's who it was for. And now they want to give it to able-bodied people across the country and illegal aliens. This is just nonsense.
So let's turn this back to the economics of all of this. Vance, we see this, unfortunately, seemingly every year. We come down to the wire. Oh, my God, if we don't pass something, there's going to be a government shutdown. We've got to get through these appropriation deals. When you were the chief economist over at OMB, is there a reason why it seems like we are always running up against the shot clock on a government being shut down? The last big shutdown we saw, 2018, 2019, 32 or 34 days. It was a pretty lengthy, the longest ever in American history. Why can't Congress just do their job when they're in session throughout the whole rest of the year? Why are we always up against a shutdown?
Yeah, and I think this one might end up being longer than that one if the Democrats don't get their act together. So we'll see how that goes. But look, the appropriations was changed back in 1974. The Budget Control Act, there was also the Empowerment Act. And what this did was, instead of having a comprehensive one budget, they made it to where there was 12 appropriations bills that had to be passed by the House and then the Senate. And what that's done is created, it just takes a long time. You know, an act of Congress, these things take a long time to go through the process, and they can't agree on anything. So instead of passing that big budget with all these 12 appropriation bills, they pass continuing resolutions, CRs. Just punt the, you know, kick the can down the road. There, you know, what's interesting though, Nick, is that there are some bills, one by Senator Ron Johnson, which is the it's an auto CR. And in general, I don't really like to just see spending continue to increase. But what this does is it says we're only going to increase it based on what it was before. So 0% growth. I would like to see teeth where it says it actually cuts the budget if they can't get an order and budget. But those are the types of things that maybe could help us avoid these sort of situations of shutdowns. But at the end of the day, as an economist, I don't really see that this has a huge effect on the overall economy. I mean, the government doesn't create new things. It preserves our liberty, or that's what it should do. And it distorts and it crowds out the productive private sector in so many ways that when people look back and say, my life really hasn't changed during this shutdown, unless you're a government employee, then you really start to take a step back and say, what are the rules of government? And I hope we can get back to that, because we're too far. And so as an economist, I'm like, look, let's see what happens here. Let's cut spending where we can, because we need to get our fiscal house back in order, or we're going to have bigger crises in the future.
Well, and while all of this is going on, let's just assume that this continuing resolution, let's just assume it's passed tomorrow. Vance, we're right up against the clock again. Now, late November is going to roll around, and unless those appropriation deals are dealt with, and I can't imagine, I'm sure some work is being done on them right now, but I can't imagine it's a whole lot as the Republicans and Democrats are fighting over the current clean CR that's on the table. We're going to be back in the same ballpark 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know what's interesting too, Nick, is that the Democrats don't want to pass this clean CR because they want to give, you know, handouts to everyone. This CR is basically the Biden budget. I was actually a little bit flabbergasted that the Republicans put out a clean CR. It was kind of a good faith effort to say, you know what, let's go a little bit further and then let's pass a better budget within the next 6 weeks. And the Democrats couldn't even take that. And so I think you're right, though. November 21st, what's that right before? It's right before Thanksgiving holidays. So that'll make another hard deadline where everybody wants to get home. And so it could be an interesting next 6 weeks to see what they do. I don't think they'll actually pass those 12 appropriation bills. It'll be another CR to punt it down the road. And I wish I could bring better news, but my guess is that's what will happen.
Yeah, and it'll probably be punted right around the end of the calendar year. So leading into Christmas, Christmas Eve in the new year, we'll be hearing the same discussions on the news, same back and forth between Republicans and Democrats in Washington, D.C. But Vance, you bring up the bigger issue, and this is something that you and I have talked about for years now, whether back on the radio or here on the Nick Craig Show. We got to get federal spending under control. And you do hear this typically around re-election time. There's midterms next year. So I'm sure you'll have predominantly Republicans running around their home districts talking about government spending this, government spending that. But it seems like when the rubber meets the road, nobody is actually interested in making substantial cuts to the federal government. Does the Trump administration, does the president himself, does he have the political willpower to make what are going to be some major cuts? And let's be honest, they're going to catch a lot of flack for if they decide to go down that road.
Well, I think that there are a few things that are heading us in a better direction, or it could head us in a better direction. One is the talk about DOGE, right? The Department of Government Efficiency. When Elon Musk came in, they stopped a lot of contracts. Maybe they saved, you know, $10 billion. And it wasn't nearly as big as what we had hoped for and what Elon Musk had promised. But it did start to set the stage for, you know what, we're spending too much. And there's a lot of nonsense that's being done by the federal government that should not be done. So hopefully Trump can continue on that track. The other thing is that there was some spending restraint in the One Big Beautiful Bill, especially with Medicaid, which is what the Democrats are fighting right now. So the Republicans have been in a good situation to start to fight back and say we need some reforms on the spending side, not just on the tax side. You know, I will say, though, that they punted those Medicaid reforms in the One Big Beautiful Bill to after the midterms in December of 2026, which is why we're running into this issue now. The Democrats are saying, you know what, let's get rid of those cuts and let's come back with something else where we can increase spending. And now we're in this fight of this shutdown period. But I do see some writing on the wall that maybe the Trump administration is more in favor of doing something on the spending side than they were during the first administration. Even though we worked hard for it at OMB, I will say we found $4.6 trillion in savings over a decade in the president's last budget. So there is examples of what we can do. Now it's just a matter of President Trump using the bully pulpit to make it happen in Congress.
Well, it's one thing for President Trump, and you bring up a big point about the midterms. You know, the last thing Republican senators and even Democrat senators, no elected member of Congress or the United States Senate, they don't want bad news about government cuts and Republicans stripping health care away from poor people. I mean, we know what the messaging will be. They don't want that stuff, Vance, in the news as we head into the late summer and early fall of next year, because it's political suicide from an election standpoint.
It really is, you know, and I think that they need to start taking some notes from the states, whether it's North Carolina or sometimes in Texas, Florida, some of these states that are spending better than a lot of the other Democrat states, they should take notes from there. You know, I've been pushing hard, Nick, for many years about a fiscal rule, a strong spending limit at the federal level, you know, a maximum of population growth plus inflation. That's too high. We need to be cutting spending. But if we can rein in the growth of spending to just population inflation and get one percentage point more in economic growth, we could balance the budget in 5 years. That's too long, but when we're running $2 trillion a year in deficits right now, 5 years, we could balance the budget. We got to start heading in that direction quick.
No question about it. And let me ask you this final question. We appreciate your time this morning. You know, this government shutdown, as you noted, always in the past, it's always been the Republicans' fault, regardless of whether Democrats are in charge or Republicans are in charge. It's always been put at the feet of the Republicans. They typically capitulate or cave to the pressure from the media and the Democrats. We're not seeing this go around. I think a lot of that is, of course, in part due to the messaging. And frankly, if we're being honest, Vance, kind of the lackluster seriousness that's being made by this from President Trump, who's posting memes of Hakeem Jeffries in sombreros during a government shutdown. Do you think he gives some courage to Republicans that, you know, we've got to fight these battles at some point and we can be on the winning side of it. You know, ripping the Band-Aid off sometimes can hurt, but sometimes it needs to be done.
Yeah, you got to heal somehow, right? And so, I think this should give the Republicans more of a backbone to fight for fiscal sanity. We've had fiscal insanity for far too long, and we need sustainable budgets that will allow for our economy to be stronger, for families to have more money to put in their pockets, and for food and shelter and everything else, instead of running up government debt, printing money, and creating more inflation. You know, something else that you and I usually talk about is the Federal Reserve. They just cut interest rates a quarter basis point last month, and that will put more money into the economy. And so I'm a little bit worried that we're going to get back into this inflationary spiral of more debt, more printing of money, and more inflation at a time when people are already having a tough time catching up to prices after the Biden inflation. And so this is a serious situation where the Republicans have got to build a backbone, keep it strong, and keep fighting for fiscal sanity, because if not, our country and our future are in peril.
We know it's a winning political message. We'll see if they can grow that spine or gain some courage in that backbone to make it happen. Vance, there's a lot of economic stuff going on right now. Of course, the shutdown's top of priority, but tariffs continue to be a major discussion. Interest rates, Federal Reserve spending, there's a lot that's going on. You cover this stuff in depth, high-level analysis day in and day out. Where can folks keep up to date with all of your publications?
Yeah, thanks, Nick, for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure talking with you. Everyone can go and check out vancegin.com. You can also get my Substack newsletter, vancegin.substack.com. And I'm on X at vancegin, often talking about these issues, trying to respond as quickly as possible from a fiscally conservative, free market perspective. So please go and check that out, along with my podcast, The Let People Prosper Show.
Vance, we always appreciate the insight. Thanks for joining us this morning on The Nick Craig Show. Always appreciate the time from economist Dr. Vance Ginn. Again, if you're interested in more as to what is going on with the economy, his Let the People Prosper podcast is a really good deep dive into those. They're short digestible shows to get into what more is going on with the economy. His newsletter as well over on Substack, available at vanceginn.com. That's VanceGinn.com. We always look forward to the conversation with Vance, and we look forward to chatting with him coming up here shortly on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a busy Thursday edition. Continuing to watch the major announcement about the peace deal between Israel and Hamas in the Middle East. Day 9 of the government shutdown continues as well. We'll keep an eye on all of the details throughout the day. Our show, as always, is only made possible by the great folks over at the Law Group here in Wilmington. Melissa Gott and her team, give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a Thursday edition. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We're back here tomorrow morning for The Nick Craig Show.